I started sending in the list of things we're going to talk about today, and it's fine.
Derail.
It's fine, but we're going through, we're in the thick of thicker things.
Ooh, I like that. The thick of thicker things.
And so it's like, you know, this podcast is meant to be fun, meant to blow off steam, meant to be just a good time. But I also know, I hear from a lot of family and friends that are listeners, and I know what their ages are, and I know what they're going through, and so I know that they're willing, if we were here, we'd be willing to talk about the thicker things. So the question is, can we talk about thicker things and still keep it light?
I think we could talk about thicker things, we just got to lighten it at the end. So
is that how we're going to
do it? Yeah, it's like, you know,
all right,
a chaser.
All right. Well then.
Shall we go?
Thicker things. So I have concluded. So I've hinted a lot on the podcast that I'm like, you know, it's an up and down affair for me at work. I'm super proud of the product we're making. I'm super proud of the results that we're getting. And but I find it to be a very stressful place to work. I'm always on, and I've adopted habits now that I realize that are like, I've literally adopted clinical anxiety. I've chosen it in pieces over the last couple
years. I chose
it.
It didn't choose me.
Well, because like, so let me give you an example of an example of it. So there's something that's broken right now in our game. It needs to get fixed by our team overnight. So I need to go to bed. So I need to send a message that if I mess up this message, then I lose a day. So I sent off a message. I have to be very careful that it's thorough enough that I get...
Well, it's because of the time difference.
Yeah.
And, okay.
That it's thorough enough that the team doesn't mess it up. And then I have to wake up, and the first thing I'm going to see on my phone is whether or not I'm screwed. So my sleep is bookended by like incredible stress and incredible stress. And then I have this choice to make when I start stirring in the morning. This choice is like, should I need to go back. I have a few more hours to sleep. I need to sleep. But should I just check my phone?
Oh, no.
And so it's like, and what I'm trying to tell you is there's consequences. Like if it doesn't go well, then I'm going to hear about it at work. So like I have adopted, like that's just one of
wouldn't that make you like not want to wake up in the morning?
Yes. So then I have concluded. So this is where we're getting into the healthy habits.
Man.
I have concluded that regardless of the external pressures, which are for sure there and not my fault, that allowing this to govern how I feel is my fault, and I'm going to change it. And so I'm forcing myself to. So you've seen me disappear. I haven't been doing the podcast for a while. Why? Because every day I'm like just holding on to just making sure everything goes great. I'm just doing it with sheer will, and every moment of every day is me worrying. Because if I'm not worrying, then I'm not doing a good enough job. Literally, like
That's what they tell you.
This is the swirl that I'm in, right? So so now I'm just like forcing myself to do the things that are going to make me healthy. I'm forcing myself to walk, to you know, exercise. I'm forcing myself to eat better. I'm forcing myself to and I'm forcing myself to accept that if it all blows up and I've done a good job, that it's okay. So that I can freaking live. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm saying all this not to say like, oh, the world out there has stressful jobs. Poor Randy has a video game job. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is I think what I'm experiencing is certainly part of professional life, but it's also part of I think there's a layer on here that has to do with the station in life that I'm at as well.
Right.
Which is at my age, in addition to this being stressful, there's another layer of my midlife crisis happening, which is like, I thought that at this age and at this level of professional accomplishment, I thought that these things were going to improve and not get worse.
Right.
And I thought because a lot of people that I like think that I'm pretty good at certain things, that I would be just respected, just walking around
right.
being respected.
Right.
And I've learned that life is no respecter of persons.
Nope.
And that regardless of past accomplishments or current efforts, I may or may not be respected for what I do. And I have to learn to be healthy in spite of the roiling seas around me. So I'm trying to sort that out. So this is my journey this week.
It feels like as we get older, some things intensify that are not. I think I just never. I don't know if I just didn't have to deal with them before or if I just never realized them before.
Or you were too busy because you're just surviving with kids or, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too, because, you know, as we have more time to kind of look around, like, there's, like, I had a weird day on Tuesday. I woke up, like, fine. I went and taught my class. By about noon, it was like a dark cloud descended on my head, and I almost like Eeyore you know, where this is constantly raining, like, nothing was my way, nothing was turning my way. The pressures of that I feel on a daily basis were I was no longer holding them, like they were crushing the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And then I had this day all day long, and I was trying to avoid it. I was trying to do some avoidance things. Like sometimes for me,
I don't think that's terrible. A lot of people are like, don't live in denial. I'm like, I don't know. A lot of life management is, I told you what I'm doing. I'm like exercising. I mean, that's kind of denial.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think managing your situation is healthy. I think it is.
Well, I had a realization yesterday. I was sitting there and talking to a friend, and the realization was when I was backed up against the wall, I perform best with pressure. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm a procrastinator. I have to wait. And if I don't, I can't perform at my best. That's just plain old stupid. It's bad, I guess, discipline. But it's kind of the way I am. So when my back was against the wall concerning my health, I took control. Like, I took control of the little things, right?
Yeah,
what I put in my mouth.
You exerted control where you could.
So I exercised, did those things, and I beat it. Well, now that I beat it, I'm kind of not as disciplined, right?
Sure.
Gaining a little bit more weight, not nearly as feeling as healthy as I was. So that, I think, contributes to where this blackness kind of was able to get a hold of me, if that makes sense.
Maybe.
So, but it was terrible. And by the time I got home, we have this, I call it a puppy because it's the smaller of the two dogs. There's these two dogs that we have, and the older one is like incredibly intelligent, but not the friendliest dog. Like, it's mostly friendly.
Okay.
But when it gets around little kids, it's not happy. It's like, no, stay away from me kind of thing. So we have to, like, if little kids come over, we have to. So that's a stress. And she's got this attitude that she's smarter than we are, I think.
Okay.
And then we had this little dog, hoping that it would help the older dog, and it did. And so and it was great, and it's actually improved our other dog quite a bit. But this little dog is a boy. Even though it's neutered, it just seems to not get potty training well. And now we have a stress of my father-in-law is going to come live with us, which we're excited about. You know, it sounds like a great opportunity for our family, but there's a lot of prep and a lot of pressure. Right. It really does change our day-to-day vibe, right?
Yeah, your vibe's going to be different.
Because we just have, right now it's just fierce, right? And he's fairly self-sufficient. So we help him with homework, help him with, you know, piano, do the things, take him to baseball, stuff like that. So, but it's only one. Whereas before there were three in that stage or four when they were all home. And
right.
And so here comes grandpa and it's wait a minute, this is going to change how we operate. He's pretty well off as far as, you know, health, but he's not well off enough to where he can be alone forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we have this dog that's not quite there and on the cusp of getting rid of him all the time, and grandpa coming, and we realize all these things that we've done to kind of handicap ourselves with this dog that grandpa can't do. You know, there's a gate, all these other little things. And it's just, so we're kind of like at this point where my wife was like, okay, I'm done. We're going to get rid of the dog. And in this blackness, I literally thought my heart was going to crush.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those guys that always thinks of dogs as food, walking food storage.
Sure.
And in a way it's a joke, but I also, it is very clear to me that one is, there's difference between humans. And I apologize to anyone that thinks this is offensive, but there's a difference between humans and dogs. They're not my children, But I really, really look forward to my favorite thing. It chokes me up just thinking about it. My favorite thing in my life has always been my kids.
Yeah.
And that, remember when they were little?
Yeah.
Like, daddy's home. And they'd run to you. Most cherished memories of my life.
Yeah.
They're all gone, right? And they're not that they don't love me, and I know they do. And they, you know, they, it's all different. It's different now.
Yeah, they're adults.
Right. and Fierce is 12, so it's not like he's going to run to the door anymore. And my wife's busy, so it's not like she's coming to the door because she's got a bunch of little rugrats that are running her ragged, and she wants to see her husband to give her some kind of peace. But the dogs do. That's so stupid. But I really enjoy the dogs. And I'm like, ugh. So my wife said that. I really felt, I thought, how am I going to drop this dumb dog off at the pound? How am I going to do it? I just don't know.
Yeah.
And it's crushing me. So I'm trying to find ways that and it's crushing my wife because she doesn't want to be known as the bad person. And she's not.
She's not trying to hurt you.
No.
She's got this problem
to solve. She's trying to figure out how she's going to run the household. And that's her that's her job. And this is just one piece that's just not fitting right now. And so.
Yeah.
It's not a human, so it can go.
Right.
So anyway, I found my way out of the blackness. I don't know specifically what it is, but it's weird.
So you and I are both, I think that a percentage of what you and I are both experiencing, well, yours especially, because you said so explicitly, is that at our age, we are, there are implications. And yours might straight be physical health. Like, it might just be a health thing that you encountered there, right? Like, you might have had a biochemical depression set in because we have those cycles as men. We have biochemical whatevers that affect us.
Right.
It could be that. But there's also this question of, like, the weighty questions of life are, I don't know, 85% answered at this age? And sometimes we don't like the answers. Like, no, this is this is it.
I was talking about one of my brothers yesterday, and we were talking about like the future of our business and the things we wanted to do. And like, I had all these ideas, and he looked at me and he says, I can't do that. And I said, what do you mean you can't do that? I'm like, that's the future. And he goes, right now I can't do that. Like that's the thing that is putting too much pressure on me.
I see.
I'm like, you know, in some ways the dreamy eyed one is immortal, right? He doesn't seem to be affected by pressures. And
That's an excellent point.
It was a human moment with me. You know, he's, you know, outside my wife, he's my best friend, right?
For sure.
I'm with him more hours than I am with any other person on earth.
Yeah.
And he just had this mortal moment where it's the same thing we're feeling, which is that at this stage of life, and I think he even said this, at this stage of life, that's the thing I can't do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. And I think we're all feeling it the same thing. It's like, wait a minute, these pressures, you making this product. And we're in the same way. It's like, wait, to go to the next level of what we can do and what our talents have and what it is that we do in our business, to go to that next level actually means a huge level of stress that I didn't realize we were carrying.
Yeah.
So it's, man. 50's weird. The other thing that's unmooring to me, there's an unmooring thing that's happening.
Well, because the same thing happened in the 40s. It was like, yeah, but I got time.
Yeah, good point.
You know what I mean? And the 50s is like, this is it, man. You got to liquidate. Everything must go.
This is the sprint to the finish. Liquidate. And we actually talked about that. What would happen if we had to go to bare minimum? Like everything, you know, go to bare minimum. How do we get there?
Well, that's the man's fantasy. The man's fantasy is like, how small could I make this thing, and how easy would it be to provide for that thing? You know what I mean? Because that's like an escape hatch for us. It's like a pressure release.
We were talking about one of our clients who has like a $1 billion portfolio, and he walked away from it.
Wow.
Walked away.
What does that mean?
He sold it all? He walked away from it. He gave it to the bank.
Jeez.
He basically, interest rates went up too fast for him to cover the nut.
Oh, wow.
He had to walk away. And we're sitting there, like, he's basically our age, right? And Clark and I are talking about this. Like, you know, we could have an empire of things if we wanted to, but do we want those things? Because the level of stress, can you imagine the level of stress of walking away from $1 billion? Like, it was just almost an aha moment. It's like, yeah, we can do a lot. but how much can we really do? And how do we build a new foundation? So the unmooring thing that I'm finding is that I've got to go back. I think it was Einstein that said, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
I don't know, maybe. Which means I know everything.
So, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, wait, when all the things I've studied my whole life, I'm realize I don't know as much about as I thought.
Yeah.
Of the things I thought I knew in my 30s and 40s, I'm realizing I didn't really know.
Yeah.
Of the things that I thought I could build, I'm realizing, wait a minute, I got to go back and fortify a few pieces before I can go to the next level. You know what I mean? Like, and so this weird unmooring is happening, which is you think your foundation is completely set, yeah. But it's actually, this is a great remodel. Like, it's a great remodel. You got to go back. You're checking your foundation.
We're taking it down to the studs.
Yeah. We're going down to, we got to do a bunch of demolition in order to build the next level.
I actually think that's the most positive way of thinking about what's going on. And it does conform. When I look at other people's lives and how it's gone at this age, I had a friend in high school, this girl that I dated, whose dad was he was a realtor who would then do small developments on the side, and was building quite a wealthy little block of business doing that, and then he put it all on this one really great property.
Oh yeah.
When I say all, you know, he's a single guy, so it wasn't right. So it was like. He developed a road with like 15 or 20 custom home plots and like piped it for water, piped it for electrical, and then was going to sell those things and make a killing. And it was right before one of the real estate crashes that happened in the 90s. I can't remember which one. And he went from being pretty rich guy to being flat broke, broke.
Yeah,
because he pushed it all, and again, I don't think that he was incredible. I mean, is it incredibly reckless? I don't think he's incredibly reckless. He's a small businessman.
What you knew, It's what he knew was going to happen. Yeah.
And they re-moored. So here's the thing that I can say, lucky you and lucky me. Like when I feel unmoored, and it's apparently most of the time lately, right? When I feel unmoored, it's like, okay, what do I have for sure? Like I have my faith. For sure. Right. Like that's a fact. And luckily for me, I have these relationships in my family that have been stable. Now I have beloved family members whose relationships with their family are not as stable. I mean, the love is stable, but just the other things that they thought would be stable are not, you know what I mean? Like I have, So, I have these two things that have me good and tethered, even though I feel like I'm adrift at the sea. So if I can just get out of my head about my stresses and just get above it for a minute, I'd be like, oh, look, there's God standing over there. And over there, there's some people that love me. Like, that's pretty good.
Right.
Like, because there's other kinds of unmoored. There's the whole unmoored. There's the, hey, I flouted my relationship with God, and I don't even know what that is anymore. And oh, by the way, these incredibly important family relationships are no longer working, and then just all by yourself. And I have some friends that I serve with at church who are in that situation, right?
Wow, that sounds terrible.
Can you imagine though? Can you imagine being more unmoored?
No,
I can't even imagine it. So love to you listeners who are going through something like that. You're incredibly courageous, and I want to beg you to find faith in God, because he'll take you in if you're earnest about it.
Amen. So speaking of unmoored and difficult situations, I have kind of a happy ending of a situation. Well, it's not a happy ending, but a happy light at the end of the tunnel. So I have a brother who has got this strangest disease, and he. Nobody can he lives in Utah and he can't, nobody's got the doctors like, wait, it's in your heart. So he goes to cardiologists and they're like, yeah, but it's in your lungs. So he goes to a pulmonologist and it's all these specialties, but none of them can help. So, it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And, now that we actually have some data on it, it looks like he might've had it he's had this for about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So it acts a lot like cancer. And His health has gone down and down and down. His ability to move has gone down and down and down. His ability to breathe at night's gone down and down and down. And so we kind of got to a point where we're like, hey, you know, brother's got a few years left.
Okay.
And we all kind of started to accept that idea because he's accepted the idea.
Yeah.
Scary, right?
Yeah.
Basically, it looks like a death sentence. So we all got together as a family. We prayed, and we prayed specifically for something. And it was really interesting that we had this like idea to pray for specifically. And the prayer was, help us find a doctor who is a scientist, like a researcher, that would be excited about his case. Because what's weird about
that is a very
the
specific,
disease, yeah, very speci- right,
very specific,
very
prayer,
specific,
yeah.
And we all felt inspired. Like that was the thing. Like this is the thing. We're praying for one specific thing.
Yeah.
And the interesting part is what the disease he has. Normally he's a white male, right? It normally affects middle-aged black women.
Okay.
It usually attacks one thing, not everything. And he's got it everywhere. So they're like, oh, okay. So anyway, we do that. So we do some calls. My sister's really good at finding doctors. We, you know, because of my grandfather and his connections with the engineering department and the new building that's in his name is now part of the medical school there. That's a new engineering medical school. We knew the head of the medical school, so I called him. And they all point us to this clinic in John Hopkins in Baltimore.
Okay.
And so he went and visited, and we got a text from him yesterday, and the text said, my appointment went well. They said I've got 40 years.
Wow. What?
But the next two are going to be tough.
Oh.
So they're going to basically take him to the edge of death with the treatments that they're going to put through him. But he's going to live another 40 years.
That's awesome.
Like, it's one of those.
Does he have to move out there?
No. So what they do, he'll have to go out a couple times, but then that doctor will give a treatment protocol that the doctors in Utah where he lives can do.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the treatments is this massive doses of steroids, and he had tried that, and he said, you know, I was in a great pain when I was doing these steroids, because that can be a byproduct of steroids. And she said, well, one, I'd probably have doubled the steroid use that you did. Number two, yeah, you're going to be in pain. This is going to be terrible, but you'll be alive. And then he says, well, what about permanent damage to my knees or something like that? He goes, yeah, but you'll be alive. Like, we can worry about knees later. We can build you knees. But if you're not alive, what's the point?
Yeah.
And she's just, matter of fact, super good, you know, compassionate in the sense that she was giving the truth.
Yeah.
And compassionate in the sense that, yeah, it's going to be hard, but also very hopeful. Like, no, I can give you 40 years. I can do that. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, yesterday, Tuesday was
so
black.
I'm assuming that means she's seen it. She's seen it happen. And she like, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Very exciting. So weird. So can you imagine being, like, you know, my brother's 4 years younger than I am, so he's still late 40s, and he's like, and he's got a bunch of kids, and he's got a little kid right now.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know that I'm going to see my kids graduate, a bunch of them graduate from high school.
Yeah.
It's looking bleak. Not a single doctor in Utah, even with all University of Utah and Huntsman, all the stuff that happens in Utah is great medical stuff. No one, not a single person, could figure out how or what it was that he could, what he was going to do.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. I'm very excited for you. That's good stuff.
It was good stuff. But anyway, how are you doing? Other than the blackness?
Yes. Well, I've overcome the briny deep, the briny depths of my soul. Arrg. No, look, I'm doing great.
By the way, the disease is called sarcoidosis. I realize I just talked about it. Everybody's like, what's he talking about? Sarcoidosis. Oh, you know what? We need to do a correction and retraction.
Well, then.
Should we?
Well, sarcoidosis. Did you say that correctly? Can you?
Sarcoidosis. Yeah.
I just want to make sure that you're sounding it out.
Do you want me to spell it for you?
Because I do this thing that I know that you do, where you see like the few big letters and you kind of fill in the blanks whether or not that's the actual word.
Right.
So anyway.
No, this is a real one. Sarcoidosis.
Let's see. Let's do a correction or retraction. Then let's hit some.
Well, so first we have to do.
I think we got to finish this idea.
Okay. Sorry. Go for it.
So, William, where are you going to be? How are you going to deal with the unmooring that apparently... Oh, you know, we already talked about this in the last podcast. How are you going to deal with the allostasis? Like, what's your allostasis? What's your third thing? What are you going to do to come out the other side of this of changes that are put upon you at this age?
Someone asked me why it was... So financial ruin, you would think, would put me up against the wall, right? But it has never. It actually doesn't.
Okay.
It kind of demotivates me. It doesn't motivate me. Like financial, not that I am.
You don't fight for survival. You fight to thrive.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And so.
That's unusual, but fun.
Yeah.
And I think I share that characteristic with you. I did not get motivated by like, you could die. I'm like, okay, but could I live?
Yeah, no, for real. That's exactly what it is. Like you could be bankrupt. Yeah, but could I
get rich?
Yeah, could I get rich? Yeah. So because of that, it's weird. Like with I think that's actually really interesting you say that. Like as we talk about, like oh that's what it was. And my health was like I could live.
Yeah,
I knew how I could live. And I think the problem is I've got to do that in my financial world, right? So. In order for me to go to the next level, which is a retirement and be able to travel around, see grandkids and all that other stuff, I've got to do some things, right? I can't live at a leverage point that I could do in my 30s and 40s
right.
Because 30s and 40s, there's a start over for the most part.
Yeah.
You can do, you know, you have time.
Yeah.
20s, 30s, 40s, there's always that start over button. But as you get into your 50s, you're like, oh, okay, wait a minute. I got to start paring down some of this leverage maybe that I have on, even though I'm able to carry it, maybe it's not great to have going forward.
That's right.
So a deleverage point is happening, you know. So yeah. So I'm looking at this as like, so do I really want to grow and continue to leverage? Because when you buy property, you know, yeah. You leverage. Or do I need to pare down and then shoot at it in a different angle? And I think that's what we've decided to do. So it's just a matter of, I think sometimes when you get dark like that, I have people like you or my brother or my wife who can kind of like, it's going to be okay and give me that.
Yeah.
And it's holding on to that piece of hope that allows me to take that next step. I don't look backwards and I'm always trying to push forward. And a blackness is what sticks me solid in one space. And if I don't see a way forward or I don't see, sometimes I just need to step into the blackness. And that's what I feel like. I'm stepping into the blackness, but I know the direction.
Okay.
And I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
I just have to take those steps each day.
Yeah.
You know, just like if you want your health to be better, okay, well, am I going to eat these French fries? I guess I have to say no.
Yeah.
Do I want to sit here and watch this TV program or am I going to go for a walk? I guess I need to go
for
a walk.
So I can say that as a huge... shout out to Rachel that she's been super patient and supportive as I've been going through it. Cause I, you know, when I'm in this fog, I'm like, I'm kind of jumpy. Like my stomach is roiling and I'm like on edge and like the kids get chippy with me and I'm like, go ahead. Bruh! I'm like, I'm like being intense.
You call that chippy? Here's chippy.
And I work from home. Right. So like, right. So angry guys skulking around all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
She's been incredibly patient and supportive. So those of you listening out there thinking that this might be going something that your loved one's going through, the patience and support is super useful, man. Like it's the only thing that's kept me moored. So, all right. All right, back to now. Back
corrections
to
and retractions.
Corrections and retractions. Is this going to be about French gardeners?
Or? Yeah, and Luddite. the dreamy-eyed one's like, what are you talking about, a Luddite? Remember when I said I called my wife a Luddite?
Yeah.
You know what a Luddite is?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so he didn't know what it was. And the way I was saying it, he couldn't figure out what it was.
Oh, Luddite.
Correct, Luddite. It's someone who is against technology because it seems to make their wives.
I'm pretty sure it was like a religious sect that was anti progress or something
right.
like that.
And originally, so Luddite. That's what I was saying.
That's a
clarification.
Educate the world.
Correct.
The correction is the dreamy-eyed one who we share the client of the French villa. Remember we talked about the gardener and all that other stuff?
Yeah.
So he sent the details.
Well, it's not correction. It's just additional detail.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there was there wasn't a pivot in there, right?
He texted. I think he's like, you know, I'm one of those guys that never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
I didn't hear a correction, so tell me what the correction is.
Okay. Well, maybe it's not a correction. We'll just give the details. So evidently the gardener for the French villa cost $1,000 a month.
A month?
Right.
That's a lot. That's right. A lot of gardener, man.
For one day a week.
Okay.
And then an additional $1,000 a month to the government union.
So you're paying $24,000 a year.
48. It's 1,000. It's 2,000 a month.
For 52.
1,000 for the gardener and 1,000
for
the government.
Right. What does that? What does that translate to for a workday? That's interesting.
That's freaking. And he's playing. How long do you think that guy's there? Let's just say he's there 8 hours. Probably not, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money an hour.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Okay, so to let him go, they had to pay a 2-year severance package. It would have been $48,000.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't fire him. They just had, so anyway, they had to pay $24,000 to the union. And so the easiest way out was to sell the property. Freaking socialism.
That's pretty wild.
It's like that Mealy thing. It's like socialism comes in the form of regulation and good intentions. Good intention. Well,
we can't have a country full of unemployed gardeners.
Right.
Well, we got to do something about this.
Right. We got to do something about it. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
They're like, well, first of all, gardeners work too hard, so they should only work 30 hours a week. Yeah. And second of all, we should have a government union that covers all gardeners in this country, France.
Wow.
Oh, geez, France.
That's pretty wild.
I want to say there's good stuff in France, but it's kind of hard for me to see.
France is actually...
How do they survive?
They're in trouble right now. They're in trouble. Because a lot of continental Europe is in trouble because of the massive influx of immigration that they've taken on as a result of the war in Syria, et cetera. They're not having their own babies, but they've imported just tons and tons and tons right. of youth and young people from another culture, and the result is there's riots and crazy, like they're in trouble. Like I actually looked at visiting France, and I'm like, I'm not really interested. I don't really want to.
Oh, really?
I don't really want to go to France.
I'd love to go to Paris someday, but it's hard for me to. I hear it's just gorgeous, and I love food. So
yeah, well,
French
if you want to go, you should go soon, because unless they correct, which would be stopping massive immigration and having a bunch of babies, like the culture is going, it's becoming a different culture.
Do you think that's possible for a first world country like ours or France or England to stop the immigration? Because we're having the same problem, right?
Of course it's possible. Is it possible
to
do so without appearing to be racist or bigoted or whatever? Like
in the current climate.
No, the current climate will roast you for that. There's just no way around it. But is it possible? Yeah. Look, and it's weird. We live still in the richest country in the world. That's still, I mean, that like we're the source of the world's wealth, right?
Right.
We still live in that world, and so the idea of shutting the doors to these wonderful Mexican families who just want like I got to do better for my kids. Let's go to California. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I hate the idea of it. So I guess I don't really want to shut down legal immigration. I don't want to shut down legal immigration. I want to actually increase legal immigration personally. But I want to increase it by way of what I just said, which is who are hardworking families that love each other, that want a better life, that believe in America? Bring them in. You know what I mean? And then who are these other people that don't love America or don't think America's great or don't want to build a better life? They just want to come here and take... Like, do not let them in. Like that's what I believe.
That seems like such a simple way, and I agree with what you're saying. Who does the interview and who determines it? What's the questions they ask?
Well, look, you can, like, these days you can just freaking get on social media and see what they say.
Well, the interesting part is that the most dangerous groups in the United States that are hurting us are not immigrant groups. There's like these social elite groups like Antifa and the La Raza and you know Black Lives Matter. I mean, these are like internal farm-raised, you know, Americans.
Well,
farm-raised,
so I mean, to answer like your question, is it possible to do it? Yeah. Do we feel like it'll be done? Not really. I feel like chaos is the move right now.
Did you see the polls of the New Hampshire primary? Like what was the number one issue? And it was immigration. Not inflation. Not the economy. It was immigration. New Hampshire.
Yeah. Well, this strategy, which I can't believe it took them this long to enact, and it turns out it's going great. The strategy of busing illegal immigrants to other states instead of just letting them stay in Arizona, Texas, and California is super working. It's working because now all these major cities like New York City is freaking out because they have thousands
Chicago's
of immigrants. Chicago's freaking out.
Michigan,
and I just
Detroit.
can't believe that they were so cavalier about it before. I don't think I would feel the same way. Let me give you an example. I hear about the amount of shootings in certain parts of Chicago, and I genuinely worry about it. And I spend time sometimes thinking, how could that be solved? What would I do if I was mayor? I do that, right?
Right. Agreed.
So do those guys really hear that thousands of immigrants are coming across the border in Texas and not think, man, that would be really hard to deal with. What would you do? You know what I mean? Because seems like maybe they didn't.
Well, I guess they're going to figure it out
now. It seems like maybe they didn't. And now that they are. And they're literally begging Texas to stop busing people to Chicago. And I'm like, we should all be begging to stop this. Like, what are you saying? Are you saying Texas is equipped to take in 6 million new people? I don't even understand what they're saying. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think what they're saying is like, I prefer to ignore this and still act really pious about it. It's like, well, you can't have both. You can be pious about it, or you can ignore it.
This is becoming...
But you can't have both.
This is becoming a real issue. Did you see that Texas... So Texas, if you don't know, put razor wire on the border.
Yeah, they're putting up barriers.
The state. Yeah. The state of Texas, right? Yeah. Yeah. And immigration is clearly a federal issue, right? The borders of the United States are a federal issue.
Yeah.
And so that's clear, right?
Yeah.
So the president and the Congress, they control immigration. And if they want to do nothing, they get to control that. So Texas is like, well, F you, we're going to do it ourselves. So they basically put this razor wire up along the river, trying to keep people out, et cetera, and so forth. And then every once in a while, they lose a court battle, and then someone goes and tries to remove the razor wire, and then Texas puts it back. Well, they lost a court battle in the Supreme Court, and they're basically saying, F you.
So I figured out. I read today the explanation of how they're saying it. So the Supreme Court.
By the way, I agree with. I totally agree with Texas doing what they're doing. It's the Supreme Court, literally. Remember, it's three equal branches of government. They're just interpreting something. Their interpretation is: does Texas have the right to put the barbed wire there? And the answer is no. You don't have the right. Go ahead.
No. The question that they answered was, does the federal government have a right to take down the razor wire? And they answered yes.
Oh, gotcha.
That's how Texas is skirting it. Texas is saying, well, we're going to put it up.
And then so you can take it down.
You
we'll
want to come
it
take
again.
It down? We'll have cameras waiting.
Awesome.
Right?
Awesome.
Dude, it's intense though, man. Because then there's like Louisiana is like, we support Texas, and Florida is like, we support Texas, and all these other governors are Virginia is like, we support Texas. So they're putting Biden in a crazy pickle in an election year, which is like, are you going to send troops into Texas to take down the barriers during a crisis? Like, that's the pickle. Now the dot, dot, dot pickle, unless it's another pickle, is this idea of just totally flouting the federal government. That's pretty freaky. And I hope that that's not what's happening. Because I guess I don't know where I stand. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to bring down the nation.
Well, but okay, so the question that wasn't answered was, does the federal government have a duty to enforce the laws that are already on the books?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the Constitution, it says they do.
Well, they're not.
I know.
So someone.
But they could say that they are. Look, they could say that they are. There is Border Patrol.
No.
There is Border Patrol.
They can't say they are. Congress passed in the Bush era. Congress passed the wall to be built.
Yeah.
And then Congress passed it again when the Trump era.
Yeah.
To wall to be built. Those laws were not overturned. They have been ignored.
Yeah.
Not only that, but they funded it. So Congress voted for it. The president signed it. The money was allocated towards it. And by fiat, the current administration said, nope, we're not doing it.
I get it. But they can say that they have, you know, Border Patrol and they're rounding people up and they're processing.
But they're not. But you could. I mean, I would love to see this. I would love to see this in a court. I would love to see the idea that they're not doing it.
I wouldn't. I think the courts are just. This idea, I don't believe in the deification of courts. I don't believe that they speak for God.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And so I totally agree with you. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think it's a big deal to kind of flout the idea that.
Well, it's fascinating to me, though. It is fascinating to me that, like. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So that's
the issue.
So I have a related political question, but maybe we're not doing political questions. Let's see. Primary. Well,
hey, by the way, the dreamy-eyed one, after listening to
our... With the voice of an angel. Don't forget the voice of an angel.
With the voice of an angel. he, after listening to our podcast, he paused halfway through and went and listened to the Mealy speech.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, that is on. It is on.
it's a banger, right?
It's on. And it's funny, one of our other listeners had texted me before you had texted me. Or no, I'm sorry, right after you had texted me and I had listened to it.
Yeah.
And he had texted it to me.
Oh, cool.
And I have another brother-in-law who actually listens, and he was a missionary in Argentina. Actually, I haven't asked him his opinion about this. I bet he'd think it's pretty cool.
Oh, but this idea that, like, if you are a builder and an entrepreneur, Argentina is with you. That's such
Argentina
a cool thing to say, man.
Not only that, one of the coolest things is, like, he was literally quoting the Declaration of Independence as a declaration to all the world.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I loved it anyway.
All right, so I wanted to say I have a couple quick things to say about politics, but they're quick beats. I don't think we have a lot to say about this. We've had two primaries on the Republican side. Trump won them both. On the Democrat side,
by the way, first time ever both were won by a non-incumbent. Did you know that?
Interesting. Second, Biden won them both on the other side. There is a new. There's this congressman that's kind of running for president on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
And he's actually kind of an interesting cat.
He went to a MAGA rally. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that little interview. He's like, yeah, they seem fine.
Not only that, he said, these are Americans. Like, they're good people.
Yes.
He's like, I expected them to be something different.
Yeah, he's like, they're not something different. So that was fun. So there's only two wild cards remaining, in my opinion.
What is Biden?
Maybe three.
Does
maybe
Biden
three.
Die?
There's three potential wild cards remaining. Okay, one, the effect of all this fake lawfare on Trump and in the election, that is unknowable. So if he gets convicted, you know the media is going to go wall to wall saying he's a felon, right?
Right.
So that's number one. So the effect of that and whether or not they can keep him off ballots, which I consider to be a branch of that.
Right.
That's wild card number one. Wild card number two is... if Kennedy actually gets on the ballot in all these states, and if he siphons the vote, and who he siphons it from,
based on polls, he siphons from Biden.
Yeah, if he actually does that, then Trump's gonna win. Trump's gonna win, which would be crazy.
I think Trump's gonna win. If it is Biden, I think Trump wins.
And wild card three, and this is just too wild in my opinion, because it's just, I mean, I don't know, it's an act of God, I guess. But like, if Biden is just can't function, like if he has a stroke or if he dies or if he, like, that's a pretty big wild card that's out there.
He would have to die before the convention which would allow the superdelegates to pick someone else, because they're not going to put Kamala up there. No one likes her. And she can't put two sentences together.
But, and another tangential off of that is if they just decide that he's too frail anyway, and that something crazy happens at the convention. But bottom line is, all things being equal today, it's Biden versus Trump versus Kennedy, and there's going to be a couple of court cases between here and there. So we'll see how it goes. I don't actually have a prediction here.
I'll go out on a limb. I think that I'm trying to when's the Democratic convention? When is it?
It's usually in the summer.
Yeah. I'm going out of limb. If things are the way they look to be today, and even if there are convictions, because I think there will be, I think he loses in Manhattan. I think Georgia's falling apart based on the DA. I think that he does get convicted in D.C. The question is, can they get that to court and get a conviction before before the election? I don't know if they can. I think that that's just going to get end up being delayed. It's very difficult to get a case like that in front of a court and argue it in a couple of years. It's just hard.
Yeah.
So I think Manhattan, he's done. They're going to appeal, and I think he'll win. But I think, you know, he's going to have at least two convictions. That's my prediction.
Okay.
There's two convictions. One's going to be the fraud case, and the other one will be a felon. And then I think at least two of the cases don't make it to see anything before the election, and then maybe peter out after that because it won't matter. Because if he loses, it won't matter, and if he wins, it won't matter.
If he gets convicted, they're going to try and put him in jail, and he'll appeal, and then the election will happen. And then
I fully expect the fact that if they didn't think he could win, I don't think they'd be after him. Because they're not after justice.
Well, no, it's nonsense. I don't have more to say about it. I just don't know how that. Look, I want to say that it won't impact people, and it won't impact most people. It'll invigorate some people, but some people it will impact. And so, how many is the question? You know what I mean?
You know that pollster? I think I sent it to you.
Lutz.
Yeah. Lutz. They asked if you had to put $150,000 down on who was going to win. He's like, I hate to say it, but it's going to be Trump.
Well, he said he hated to say it because he predicted it wouldn't be that way before. And he's like, now it just
you don't
seems
come
like-
back from the things that's happened to him. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And he says that so it's going to be interesting. I'm going to predict Trump for the circumstances. I think I don't think a conviction's going to hurt him. I think if anything, it helps him. I think that once he is the nominee, the persecution or the prosecutions become worse. I don't think what I mean by that is that they look worse. They look a lot worse. Because now it's not just a potential candidate against me. Now it's the candidate against me.
Yeah.
And so I think in that
I saw Trump joking about it the other day. And joking about it is definitely the move. Like, if he keeps doing that, that'd be really strong.
Yeah, he's making some good moves. I mean, like, he's not. I mean, he's very gracious in these, you know, DeSantis and the other people that have endorsed him recently and left the field. I do not think Nikki Haley is going to get that. Did you see, by the way, Nikki Haley's numbers in New Hampshire? 70% of her voters were Democrats.
Mm.
That's crazy. They're not voting for Nikki for.
That is crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah.
All right. I have a couple of quick observations.
Yes.
One, transnational populism.
What does that mean?
I've observed this phenomenon, which maybe it has existed in the history of modern times, but I can't think of very many times when it's existed. Where
are you talking about transsexuals?
Nope. Transnational populism. So I'm talking about that there is. Right now, there is some populism that's happening in America that when these cats go abroad, they get giant audiences abroad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Mealy's one of them.
What's that?
Mealy's
one of them. Tucker Carlson can go to freaking Hungary and get a couple thousand people to show up.
Yep.
And he yesterday had a rally in Canada, and it filled a stadium like Tucker did.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, did you see what it was? Then, did you see what he does? Then, he's like, invading. Did you see? You know, have you watched the buildup to that? He's invading Canada to liberate it.
Great. And then Jordan Peterson, like when he goes places, he'll get huge turnouts. There's this thing.
Did you hear?
These are all people on the right. These are the people that I know of. I actually don't know how this goes on the left, but I'm assuming that it's happening on the left too. And I think that technology is facilitating a collective social movements that transcend borders.
Right.
And I think that that's wild. I don't know that we've seen it at this degree before. There used to be people, but I don't know. I mean, I know that presidents can do it, right? Like Ronald Reagan get a bunch of people to show up at the wall,
right.
or Clinton can get a bunch of people to show up in England. Like world leaders can do it. But like this idea of popular voices doing it is it's usually pretty confined to a culture and people. That's kind of surprising.
It's pretty cool. I love it. Okay. And it's interesting too because all of these like all, like there's a lot of Canadians that come down to the United States to like preach the liberty down here, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson's one of them. By the way, did you see Jordan Peterson lost his appeal in the and so they're going to they're sending him to re-education camp.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't can you imagine?
Wouldn't you
that?
Want to be a fly on the wall and Jordan Peterson is in that classroom?
That'd be amazing.
He would awesome. He should record it. He should go and just freaking record it.
He should live stream the whole thing.
Yes. You know what I mean? It'd be awesome. How awesome would that be? By the way, correction. 70% of the voters for Nikki Haley were not Democrats. 70% of the voters in New Hampshire for Nikki Haley were not Republicans.
Oh, okay.
So, so I mean, that's a small distinction, but yeah, they were not registered Republicans.
All right. That's wild. I didn't realize that. That explains her number because I was like, 70%. How'd she get to 46%? That's crazy. All right. So then next one, this is my last observation for the day. I am actually, this is going to sound weird because I didn't think this would be true. I miss movie ratings.
Oh, I agree with you.
So I'm
like the Siskel and Ebert days when you could like.
No. I miss G, PG.
Oh, that kind
PG-13, R, and X. Yeah. I miss them. Because we have this thing that now on streaming where a lot of stuff is like TVMA, which is mature, right? Which you might like immediately think that's like an X-rated movie because that's kind of what, because it could be,
right.
By the way.
Yeah.
But then you have some of those are just PG-13 violence, you know what I mean? And so there's, so I watched some of them. Anyway, I'm watching a show that by rights, and I won't name it because I don't want to promote it, but like by rights, it's like a slightly more interesting PBS mystery. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm watching it. It's going fine. And then all of a sudden, there's like a hard sexuality moment. Like, what the what?
Yeah.
And it's like, that crap wouldn't have happened. If it had said R, I would have at least been ready with the remote control to fast forward, right? But I'm sitting here just like, but whoa, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I so I missed the clarity of that.
I totally agree because TVMA, I've watched some TVMA that was like, no big deal. And then TVMA that's like, what the crap? This can't be, you
this
know,
shouldn't be
how do
house.
I get this out of my history?
How do I block this? How do I get this out of my history?
I do not want this in the algorithm.
Right? Anyway, so that's my observation for the
day. A great observation. I thought you meant like, you know, 4 stars, 3 stars, but I do. Like, I go to Rotten Tomatoes and I don't feel like it's even.
Well, they've been proven to take bribes. The reviewers of Rotten Tomatoes, that happened recently, so that's kind of funny.
Jeez, Rotten Tomatoes. Do you know what happened to us? We got, speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, what's the other service that does, they do rate things?
Metacritic?
No, they rate things that, like, you know, restaurants and stuff like that. What's that?
Yelp?
Yelp.
Yeah,
dude, and we were going through our doing a reconciliation for the end of the year for the building we own, and you know we have some credit cards that we use for purposes over there, and we're going through the credit card statement, and we come across like, wait, this is like a $9,000 charge to Yelp, and so my you know the dreamy eyed one calls me up and is like, did you spend $9,000 at Yelp? I'm like, what? No. And he goes, I go, when? And he goes, da da da. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then so we look in the next month, there was another, I think it was $8,000 and $10,000. There was like $18,000 to Yelp for a review or whatever. And we're like, what? Or advertising, something like that.
Yeah.
And we're like, it was total fraud.
Oh, it was fraud?
Total fraud. It doesn't look like it was Yelp.
Not from Yelp.
No, yeah, it doesn't look like it was Yelp. It looks like someone somehow got the number of a card, and they used that to buy Yelp advertising.
Wow.
I kind of wish we could, like, drill into it, like, call Yelp, like, hey.
Who's the Yelp shill? Who's the Yelp fanatic? You know what I mean?
Who used this money? Like, what were they advertising?
Yeah. Well, crazy friends, this stuff. Has been Waystation Podcast, your source for deep thoughts and analysis of the middle age, the journey of the middle-aged man.
The thick of the thick.
Thick of thicker things.
The thick of thicker things. That's a mouthful.
This has been the Waystation Podcast, life hacks, social commentary, and amusing stories.
I'm William.
I'm Randy.
Have a good day.